Thank you for downloading the latest Flaneur podcast. This week we look at the London Art Fair, Uppercut at the Southwark Playhouse, and Light at the Barbican. With total darkness, discordant music, and occasional LED strip lighting, the pit at the Barbican could be the location for some of the enhanced interrogation techniques used by our lieutenant mispronouncing military allies. But according to Cruel Britannia, it's not just the Americans who have used this torture by another name on captives. Light from theatre Ad Infinitum is inspired by Ian Cobain's revelations that Britain's security services have played a disturbing role in developing psychological torture. "We will be watching you," barks a disembodied voice at the start, referring to the use of mobile phones, but setting the scene for the mime that follows. Light takes place in the early 80s. That's the 2080s. As with many dramas set in the future, the first thing that has disappeared from the world is good taste. Uniforms are de rigueur, with everyone, good or bad, wearing the same blue military police-y overalls. We think it's outrageous that the government agencies intercept our text messages, but 70 years from now that will seem a quaint worry, akin to fretting whether the postmistress is steaming open our telegrams. The concerns of the late 20th century security services have changed. The first thought messages have just been sent, brain to brain, and the government wants to discover what we're thinking. Five actors with torches tell the tale of rebels, doctors, and the interception of newly developed thought messages. The actors throw themselves around in a quickly changing series of mimed scenes. The Barbican's lighting assistants have the evening off, and the actors do their own illuminations, lighting each other up as they move across the stage. This is an engaging technique, focusing attention on precisely the face or body that the director requires. There is no looking at anything else, because everything else is black. The general premise of governmental misuse of new technology is clear, though what precisely ensues isn't easy to follow. After all, there is no speech. The two main male actors are shaven-headed doppelgangers. Everyone wears the same outfits, and everything takes place in small bursts of light in the dark. In lieu, maybe the Americans have a point, of voices. There are surtitles that give importance to some banal lines, but there is no scenery and no props to help explain the actions on stage. Sound designer Chris Bartholomew has opted for exaggerated sound effects for every action, whether putting on a hat or climbing on a motorbike. These become wearing long before the end of the show. Light is part of the London International Mime Festival, which celebrates contemporary visual theatre. The piece is a bold attempt to draw attention to the problems of society in a new way. The programme blurb mentions Edward Snowden and fears of the out-of-control security services, but it hits its target obliquely and appears as a sci-fi futuristic speculation rather than the contemporary critique it wants to be. This weekend saw London's first big art fair of the year at the Islington Business Design Centre. Like most art fairs, it brings home the fact that art is a business and selling product is the aim. Pictures lean on walls with scribbled notes on their backs. Others stand wrapped, their corrugated cardboard covers boldly addressed in marker pen. More pieces are fetched from small cupboards to fill gaps on the walls. Gallerists sit at their desks looking bored. People rush back and forth along the narrow corridors between stands. It's not a contemplative atmosphere. Don't try and look at everything. Much will be the same old, same old. Explore the aisles as though they were narrow streets in an unknown Mediterranean town. Listen to the local accents. I'm surprised that hasn't been bought. It's wonderful. Touche pas. These do work very well in pairs. What are the highlights of this year's London Art Show in Islington? It depends which way you walk, which pieces catch your eye among the horde of visitors. But here are a few that we spotted. Maisie Broadhead's Vermeer spoofs at Sarah Myerskoff. Marieke Weise's untitled obliterated portrait at GBS Fine Art. Jeremy Kidd's Thames photographs that allow the content to define the outlines of the canvas. Jess Wilson's Light Switch 2 at Jealous, and Henry and Bragg's bingo performance, an inclusive, enjoyable homage to a disappearing English traditional pastime. I like that one. I don't like that one. I like that one. I find their work really harrowing. I don't get it at all. Did you make a friendship during Freshers' Week that you came to regret? Did you not spot your new best friend's fanatical love of politics until it was too late? Did you have to spend the next 3 years sidestepping them to avoid being lectured ad nauseam on trade unionism, Keynesianism, or another topic they had close to their hearts? Uppercut is currently showing at the Southwark Playhouse, and watching it feels very much like being trapped with one of those politics-obsessed students. Written by Juliet Romero, the subject is the representation of black people in Parliament, a topic that isn't best served by 90 minutes of virtually humourless lecturing. It is 2011, and two black politicos who have just slept together are talking about politics. Akemji Nifonyan plays patient, compromising Michael, who has climbed his way into Parliament and become a Labour MP. Emma Dennis Edwards Caron is a wannabe who has been expelled by the Labour Party. The third character is Barry, a white Labour Party spin doctor played by Andrew Scarborough, who manipulates and encourages both of the others. He enjoys playing gatekeeper to the Commons in our democracy's peculiar world, where getting selected by the party is a bigger hurdle than getting selected by the electorate. He also briefly questions the idea of black-only shortlists for parliamentary candidates, but otherwise the play assumes the correctness of this contemporary injustice towards candidates who might be ideal, yet of the wrong colour. We follow the characters back through time to various important dates in Labour Party history. Their growing youthfulness is portrayed by an increased interest in dancing, and we see their changing views and the events that drive their thinking. This backwards setup removes any tension, and though a couple of lines draw a laugh, the script is non-stop race politics. These three people talk nothing but politics, save for the occasional black music discussion, even in the bedroom. With no alternate perspective, the bombardment is monotonous. The well-thought-out set looks like Holly-Golightly's apartment, all piles of unopened packing cases. These are moved around by the cast to make chairs and desks. It is a nice touch, reminding of the insubstantiality of politics, and its here today, gone in 5 years nature. Can MPs really make any difference, or are they just rearranging furniture? Uppercut looks at internal Labour Party race politics over the last few decades. Politics students, socialist historians, and Labour Party activists will be best placed to find it interesting. A general regard for justice and fairness is not enough. You need to be seeped in Labour Party politics. Otherwise, though sincere, the play becomes tedious and makes a valid debate seem an overlong grievance. Thanks for listening. You can find more reviews online at www.flaneur.london. See you next time.